Welcome to Sound and Vision, conversations with contemporary artists and musicians about the creative process. Here's the host of Sound and Vision, Brian Alfred.
Sound and Vision is sponsored by Golden Artist Colors. Golden makes some of the best art materials that you can get. You can find their products online at goldenpaints.com or in your local art store. Sound and Vision is also sponsored by Fulcrum Coffee Roasters. Fulcrum makes incredible coffee that you can have delivered to your door. Check out their website, fulcrumcoffee.com, where you can order subscription coffee services to have different blends delivered straight to your door, and you could save by entering code ALFREDSTUDIO when you check out.
Sound and Vision is supported by the New York Studio School. The school welcomes artists of all levels to join the upcoming 5-day intersession marathon entitled Constructing Space, led by painter Ed Praby, and taking place from Thursday, March 21st through Monday, March 25th, 2024. Rigorous and immersive, the Studio School's legendary marathons present an extensive range of art-making strategies, comprehensive critiques, and inspirational discussions. Virtual marathons are led in real time online, enabling artists to participate from their studios anywhere in the world. Visit nyss.org to apply today and stay tuned for summer marathons coming up in June and July.
Brian Calvin is an artist who lives and works in Ojai, California. He studied at the University of California, Berkeley, and at the Art Institute of Chicago, and he received the California Arts Council Fellowship and an art residency from the Art Production Fund in Giverny, France. He's exhibited at Anton Kern Gallery in New York, Corvimora in London, Cabinet in Milan, Alameen Rake Gallery in Brussels, Corbett vs. Dempsey in Chicago, Musée in Ostend, Belgium, Le Consortium in Dijon, France, and Mark Fox in LA, amongst many others. Amongst his group exhibitions, he has shown at the Museum of Contemporary Art in Lyon, the Astrup Fearnley Musée in Oslo, Samsung Museum of Art in Seoul, the Museum of Contemporary Art in Los Angeles, and the Centre Georges Pompidou in France. His work is included in the collections of the DePaul Art Museum in Chicago, the Los Angeles County Museum of Art, and the Orange County Museum of Art, just to name a few. I spoke to Brian about working with the figure, music in Chicago, California Quiet, drawing, and much more. Here's our conversation.
Yeah, I think so. And you've been doing it a long time now.
So. Yeah, I guess 2015, so yeah. I mean, time flies, right?
Yeah, it does.
It goes quick. So I'm excited to talk to you because not only am I a big fan of your work, but also there's like the music past, which I don't know how many people are super versed, engaged, or interested in Chicago 90s music scene, but I am. I mean, I was
all right.
I mean, very much. It's a part of my youth, you know.
Oh, nice. It's a very specific thing, so people who are into it are into it, and other people are like, why are you, you know,
yeah.
Chicago, what?
So. Right. Yeah, but I'm sure we could get into it, but I'm sure it informed your work and that sensibility in it.
For sure. I mean, you know, on some level, I mean, I grew up in California. I grew up in the Central Valley here, though, which is much more like agricultural. So like people in provincial areas everywhere, you know, it was a lot easier to and more direct to kind of discover your way in music before, you know, I had any sense of like really the visual arts. So,
right.
And then moving to Chicago, you know, it was for me, it was. I went there for grad school, but it was also, you know, right at the heyday. I moved there in 92, so obviously, like, Drag City was already kind of going on full early cylinders, and, you know, there was just a lot to do. It's a very livable city too, which is nice if you're making music and making art and you're young, because, you know, it's not that expensive, or at least it wasn't at the time.
Right. And when it's cold, you can just go. I feel like when I visited friends who were playing music in Chicago, or artists or whatever, it's perfect, because when it's freezing and insane outside, I mean, you just hunker down in these studios and practice spaces and you stay warm.
Yeah, it's true.
It's not like, I mean, I often used to ask people a lot and wonder, people go to art school in New York City, it's like, is it hard? Because there's so much stuff to do all the time.
Yeah.
And in the West Coast, like if you're in LA and you go to school there, the sort of like, you know, first thought in your mind is, well, is it hard to stay in when it's so beautiful out all the time? But I guess Right. You just get used to it. You just get used to your surroundings, and then you find your lane of what you want to do. But Chicago, yeah, it just seems like lots of good music, and Yeah. It's okay being indoors.
Absolutely. And I mean, for me, like temperamentally, like I also loved that it wasn't New York or, you know, Yeah. Los Angeles or California. That appeals to me. There's something about, especially like grad school, I totally get people wanting to go to, you know, the heart of whatever they think is kind of this center and really like get right to it.
Yeah.
But I definitely was kind of more like, I want studio space and time to just fuck around and develop as an artist.
Yeah.
So it really suited me.
It's not like hitting the stage right out the gate. You have some time there to just tinker. Totally. And yeah, well, I would imagine you had space, right?
I moved there from the Bay Area. I did my undergraduate at Berkeley, and so I was living in Berkeley, and you know, that also has its own, you know, whatever reputation is, like Yeah. Sometimes provincial or something, but like that appeals to me. And, you know, in the 30 whatever years since all of that, like obviously people have come to have a really different understanding of local scenes and, you know, whatever provincial in air quotes scenes. Yeah. And I don't know if that was kind of via the internet or whatever, you start to realize like, oh yeah, like, you know, there's stuff going on in a lot of different areas, and, you know, it's just a matter of kind of, sometimes it can be hard to find a audience outside of your local situation, but, I feel lucky that to have been able to do that.
Well, the draw to Chicago, I mean, was it that it wasn't in between, or, I mean, how much of it was, you know, anything from the Harry Who to the music scene to whatever, or was it purely, this is a place that's got a pretty good reputation as a school, and it's somewhere different from where I am now, basically?
Somewhere else was probably the most important. I remember at some point, like, I don't know, when I was almost done at Berkeley, I got some, you know, traveling fellowship where you know, they give you a little stipend or something. So I just took a road trip cross country. And it was the first time I visited Chicago. I think it might have been the first time I visited New York and Boston. And, you know, like went around and just kind of like checking out cities that as a West Coaster, I had never really spent time in and would stay everywhere for like a week. And Chicago just ended up somehow appealing to me.
Yeah.
I don't really remember why. And certainly I wasn't familiar deeply with like the Harry Who at that point. I mean, I would have known Roger Brown and Yeah. Stuff like that, you know, kind of the bigs, a little bit of Carl Wersum. But immediately when I got there, those people, like Ray Yoshida in particular, who, you know, was a very influential teacher for all of them, kind of took me under his wing. Yeah. And there was also always an affinity with kind of Northern California, like funk art. And that was one, you know, local provincial scene I had been very familiar with and had been really influential on me as a really, really young, you know, just starting to paint.
Yeah. Just because it was around and that's what you were seeing, right?
Yeah. And it just like spoke to me. I mean, you know, whether it was like David Park or Joan Brown, early Diebenkorn, like, you know, and then kind of expanding out to lesser knowns from there. But, you know, it's a really good, I already, once I started painting, found that most of the time I was zeroing in on the figure for whatever reason.
Yeah.
But I didn't really know what I was wanting to do with it. It's not like I wanted to spend my time in like figure drawing or figure painting classes, but somehow anytime I wasn't dealing with a figure, often my like interest would kind of like start to kind of dissipate.
Yeah. Well, when did, I mean, we can start early on or start when you were in school, but when did music enter the equation as far as not just something that you were, you know, a lot of us growing up, especially in that era, it was just like music was the lifeline to something outside of your, your day-to-day boredom or whatever. But when did you start playing or, you know, when did music become a little more seriously involved in your creative process?
That's a good question. I mean, you know, I was, you know, a high schooler in the mid-80s. Mm-hmm. So, like so many people at that point, you know, I think a handful of us all grabbed like a four track and started doing whatever home recordings. And then you started hearing other stuff other people were doing and kind of like tape trading. And so on some level, like music came first, but it was, you know, it's like doing it in your bedroom or someone's garage. And it was very much just among a handful of your, you know, immediate friends. And then, so that stayed with me for a while, but it was really in Chicago that was the first time, the first real time I kind of started to like play more as a band and truly collaborate as opposed to just, you know, kind of farting around at home and doing home recordings. And and that, you know, that was a really different experience. But by that point, I already had, like, from the second I started painting, which is probably like 1990, like, I already just knew that that's what I wanted to do every day.
Yeah.
So in Chicago, though, I think it was around 93 that I first started playing music with people. And, like, it was a great collaborative thing. It got me out more. I mean, I definitely can sit in a studio and paint by myself for really long stretches. So it was interesting to collaborate. Like visually, I have less interest usually collaborating. So musically, it's that great thing of course, you know, the kind of exhilaration of like this, the sum of the parts being greater than any individual thing. So
yeah, it's such a different dynamic, right? I mean, when I was in, I mean, in high school, I had my band, you know, we were in a band,
right?
And then actually a lot of the guys I was in a band with went to Chicago and started other bands that we, you probably know, but then when I went to graduate school, college, we tried to maintain the band, but it's hard. Everyone goes away. Graduate school met, I was like, I'm going to graduate school just to paint. And then I met a couple people who liked music that, and they played music and ended up being in a band and playing, releasing a couple records, which was the opposite of what I expected to do. You know what I mean?
But totally.
But then it gets to a point, if you're like, if you're an artist who works in the studio pretty singularly and don't have a big team or something, there's something great about just, you know, you punch your own clock. You work as much as you want. And then that band thing gets a little cumbersome because it's like working with schedules and there's something freeing about like, well, I could just work and paint all day. So
absolutely. I mean, ultimately I feel like I was, I mean, not made to that sound, this kind of like fate or something, but I feel it's much more intuitive to me to try to communicate visually.
Yeah.
I'm a, but, you know, I'm a I'm more of a fan, I guess, of music in the larger sense.
Yes.
And of course, to me, it sometimes feels like the equivalent of wanting to, you know, like being a kid and wanting to be a, you know, basketball star or something.
Yeah.
I mean, music, there was this other thing, but I was never under the illusion that like my skill set there was something that the world was really clamoring for.
Yeah.
Not that it is with painting, but with painting, like, I don't care. Like, I know this is what, you know, this is a form of communication that I felt really dedicated to kind of prolonging and exploring now for so long.
Yeah.
And music is just a, you know, it's a fantastic kind of side thing if you can do it. But, you know, I really haven't been doing it now for whatever, at least a few decades. It's like I sit around, I play guitar in the studio, I play guitar at home, but, you know, it's not like I'm looking to get out there and perform for people.
I mean, I think we're in a very similar boat. But when you did get to Chicago, I mean, you landed, if I'm not mistaken, right when things were really getting kind of like, it seemed like the skillet was on and it was heating up, and there were a lot of ingredients about it that hit the skillet, because, you know, there was a transformation of all that earlier stuff and then all the post-rock stuff. I mean, it was just an amalgam of all these people collaborating and working together. I would imagine being around that, it was just inspiring, just seeing it in the environment of all those people working and collaborating.
Yeah. I think it was. At the same time, it's funny because you kind of keep your head down and you're just doing your thing, and then every now and then you'd kind of like realize all the different, you know, kind of simultaneous things that were happening.
Yeah.
And you know, you get brought together every now and then, and then it's really great. But it also, again, like, I don't know, maybe it's kind of unique to Chicago in a certain way, I don't really know, or maybe just to like, you know, less centralized big cities.
Yeah.
Or something, like no one there seemed to take it too seriously as far as the idea of a scene, even though there were a lot of really talented people collaborating and doing stuff. So it just felt really organic, and everyone seemed, you know, for the most part, pretty supportive.
Yeah.
And again, like, there were a lot of hyphenate people, as there always are in the arts, of people who like were doing this or that, and you wouldn't necessarily know like what someone really thought of themselves.
Right.
And you know, I think that's part of also being in your 20s, 30s. Let's all get together and do this. And then when I moved away from Chicago, moved back to California, you know, it was pretty much just hit the ground running and like just painting, and never really thought too much about it. You know, every now and then I get an itch to try to do something, but it tends to kind of peter out because...
Yeah.
You know, it's just too, it feels too complicated to me to, you know, and I also, music to me was very much like being in a room with someone. I know you can do all this stuff now over, obviously with digital stuff back and forth, but like that just is so foreign to me that I, you know.
I know,
again,
right?
No one's asking for me to do these things. So the last thing I need to do is like, well, maybe I can, you know, try to record an album over Zoom. Like,
yeah,
no one wants that, including me.
The Zoom sessions.
Yeah.
Well, and you had, you know, your work is, your paintings, I feel like, are very distinctly your work. And over the years, you know, of looking at your work, it's been nice to see it like change, and then the things that are consistent and what you're tweaking things. And so I'm interested, like when you were in graduate school, how was the figure pretty prevalent, and were you working, what things were you working through? And then did you have the, when you came back to California, a lot of times when you get out of grad school, there's like a weird phase where you got to digest everything. And then some people just hit the ground and they fly. So I'm curious as to like what that progression of the work was like through grad school and then getting back to warmer climate.
Yeah, that's a good, for me, I finished, well, in grad school, the work, I kind of was like made a certain body of work for a while, still figure based in a way, but it also, it was using like kind of these beaten up versions of Popeye, Charlie Brown, olive oil, you know, like kind of well-known characters, and then just kind of trying to make them look like they've been through the ringer. And that's kind of what I went to. I was making those in California. I went to Chicago, made those through grad school, and immediately out of grad school, like started showing with a gallery there in Chicago. And I felt immediately like, okay, it's time to shift to something else. Like I felt like I had kind of done what I wanted to do with that work.
Yeah.
The gallery wasn't necessarily, they didn't seem too stoked on that.
You're going to change it up, you know? Are you sure about that? Yeah.
So I made a show for them that was like loosely based on John Wilkes Booth of all things. And then I kind of like, basically that gallery and I shortly thereafter decided like, this isn't such a great situation. So I asked for all my work back and I started making, that would have been, I can't remember, like 95, 96. So for a few years, I just really hunkered down, like made work in the studio, really enjoyed it because I quickly realized, you know, I was starting to realize like, maybe this isn't what I want to do. And it was purely just dealing with like a gallery that you felt shitty about, that you didn't. And, you know, I was young. I didn't know how to communicate very clearly. I didn't have that sense of also like, you know, these people are working for you as much as you're trying to work things for them.
Yeah.
And it felt like a bad boss. And every time the phone would ring, I realized like, I don't want to answer. It could be the, so, you know, I got out of that and just started working. And I would say that's where like the seeds of like the work on some level that I'm still making today started. And I only showed that like once in Chicago right before leaving. And Sam Prekop had a show of his own paintings. I think the gallery, if I remember right, it was called Jan Cicero Gallery.
Mm-hmm.
And he put together a little group show, you know, at the same time at the space that was, I think it was like, you know, musicians who paint or something like that. So I had a few of these up and I remember it was not long before I was moving back to California. And I was just really glad to like sneak them up on the wall.
Yeah.
And like through that period too, I had a few shows in Japan. Mm-hmm. Right when I left the other gallery, this woman, Junko Shimada, who had been at 303 in the early 90s and then moved back to Tokyo and opened her own gallery, I started having shows there. So I always had the sense of like, there was like a continuity. I kept working.
Yeah.
Whether anyone else could track that, you know,
yeah,
didn't really matter. Like you still had deadlines. And then when I got back to California, so I guess on that level, I mean that there was this kind of exploratory period where I was kind of figuring out more like, what do I want to do next? Happened in Chicago. And that would have been synonymous with like the music stuff and everything. And then when I moved back to California, I actually had a show in Tokyo set up. I brought the paintings with me. like within a few weeks of living in LA, a few people came over to see them. And I ended up having a show with Mark Fox Gallery there, like later that year. The London Gallery Corvey Moore that I still show with, like he came over, I think, in those first few weeks. So it was kind of this strange thing where a lot of relationships that immediately ended up kind of having much more visibility, I guess, in the contemporary art world happened pretty immediately. I mean, I think it was like a year later, Bruce Hainley wrote a piece for Art Forum. And it just kind of, you know, I think year after that, I was in the Allison Gingeris curated the show Dear Painter that was at the Pompidou. Mm-hmm. You know, and all these things just kind of, I thought, wow, is this how it goes? It just keeps, you know, and then you realize like, no, it doesn't. You have a lot of highs and lows.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was a good, I hit the ground running and it kind of just went for a while.
Yeah.
Long enough at least to where you kind of realize then the next time you had a valley, like, okay, right. You know, maybe it'll come back. And
yeah, that's such a strong metaphor because, you know, I had a mentor, an artist who's been around the block for quite a while.
Right.
And he said to me, you know, it's like surfing. He's like, you catch a wave, but whenever the waters are still, you have to stay on your board. You just have to keep out there and keep on it because you're going to hit these, you know, peaks and valleys. And it's a lot of opportunities for the people who don't bail. They just don't.
Yeah.
You got to ride out the storm.
I think it's true. And, you know, I feel a lot for younger artists these days where I feel like, you know, there's more of a expectation that you're supposed to, like, have your shit together and...
Yeah.
Certainly by grad school, and then you're just supposed to like nail it right out of the gate. And you know, everything's gonna, no matter how kind of hot something seems, like even if it is so hot, it's gonna then feel overexposed. And you know, you have to have a thick skin to realize like it's kind of horrible. The way the, like, certainly market tends to play with things. And these days with, you know, I don't know, Instagram and whatever, there's just such a visible craziness to, like, the market quality and, like, whatever. You know, I mean, I want to make a living and I like to just paint. But the kind of focus on that sometimes is so unhealthy because if you... kind of like whatever you're just saying with surfing. I mean, you got to just keep evolving. I mean, I guess whatever, people don't have to, but like I love the painting part of it.
Yeah.
And so I just want it to keep evolving. And it's funny because it's often like, I mean, I've had this now, I've been painting long enough and showing long enough that often when you have your new show, people are wanting you to make work that you made like 5 years previously, and you're kind of like, well, you know, I made that then and now I'm making this now, and then 5 years later they're wanting the work you were making right then. And you know, it's I don't know what to do with that, like, and you know, I'm lucky enough to have galleries that really support me and, you know, certainly some good collectors, but it is funny the way that people wait until something seems so agreed upon as like, oh yeah, there's this,
right.
And they think that's what you do and that's what they want, or so I don't think you can, you know, you can drive yourself crazy trying to like anticipate that or feed that beast. So, you know, that's one of the reasons also, you know, where I live, Ojai, it's about, I don't know, 80 miles north of LA, and it's a sleepy little town, and I really like that you know, I have a day-to-day life where painting is a huge part of it, but, like, being part of the art world is not a part of it really at all.
Yeah.
And I mean, that also goes back in some ways to, you know, your questions about music. As far as like a community, I definitely felt more part of a community that was like the music community than I ever did part of like, you know, team visual arts. I love painting, but I definitely didn't have that. Like even in grad school, you know, there were those kind of people who get in at like 4 p.m. and stay all night, and they would all have these stories of what they were doing at night. And, you know, I was like a 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. like just office worker going in there using my studio and then leaving and having whatever life outside of, you know, school. And I just think, whatever, I mean, you know.
Yeah, I think it's interesting for people of our generation. I mean, I think you're just a few years older than me, but our generation, where we've migrated through that, coming up in that different pace, and but then being involved in the current deluge and speed of everything.
Right.
But I think to your point of like being able to move out, I mean, you know, you've put in decades of painting and doing this to where people, you know, they know your work. They know it's there's something about, like, I think putting the time into it. But right now it must be so hard for artists because of that speed and that, like, if you're not known yet and you want to get known, you want people to see your work or show your work, it must be such an accelerated rate compared to what we were. We had time. We had space. Like, in between shows, you weren't posting every day. People weren't seeing your stuff. You had incubation periods. Your work could go through changes. Now it's like, everything is just, you know, the foot's on the gas pedal, like flooring it. And I don't know how people can sustain that. Because, and like to what we were saying before, sustaining is a big part of it, because work changes over time. It mutates, and sometimes it needs a long time to mutate and can't be forced to do that overnight or in your next show or whatever.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, you got to kind of give it both sides, because then sometimes, you know, I also think deadlines are these wonderful things that like force change or force you to confront your fear of change and realize, you know, oh, I only have this amount of weeks, or do I have it in me to like experiment? And, you know, the answer is usually yes. And artists have been coming up against deadlines forever. And it's always been, you know, kind of the mother of invention. And, you know, even I think, whatever, when people had royal patronage, they still had to get work done, and they still had to, you know, it's like there's this myth of kind of working freely at your own pace. I mean, I just don't think too many people have actually ever really experienced that.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, it's a metaphor for life. I mean, we all have our due date. we're gonna hit it at some point. Like, if we all lived forever, you'd be like, I don't have to paint today. I'm just gonna be here forever. You know, you'd just kick the can down the road probably a lot more. But nothing inspires you like feeling like, well, you know, I want to try to say something here before I get too old, or before you
absolutely.
Know. So it's a motivator.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, whenever I feel like whenever I have a show up, go to the opening, come back, and, you know, someone will inevitably say like, oh, that's nice. Like, you're going to take some time off now or something. Yeah. And it's like, if especially my wife, if she's there, she'll just be like, no. I mean, and it's not because I'm wanting to, it's not the like, oh, I need to stay relevant or anything like that. It's just like, this is how, like, I don't totally know what to do with myself if I don't like paint.
Yeah.
You know, mainly every day. Of course you can skip a day, but then skipping 2 days starts to be like, ugh.
Get that itch. And
it has nothing to do with, you know, feeding the beast. It's just like, it's how I kind of process my daily life. And, you know, vacations, I've had to try to learn how to more appreciate when we're somewhere else. And, you know, luckily drawing is such a huge part of my process. And that then becomes something that's just really easy to take with you anywhere. And that's, over the years, that's what's really kind of like, that is what kind of keeps me going and constantly generating like a freshness in my own practice that, you know, makes me feel like, even though I use a lot of repetition, makes me feel like I'm not repeating myself, even if I am using repetition.
Totally. And I was like that too for, I feel like for a decade, I was just working nonstop. And then I had to, the only time I would really take a break is when I had a show overseas or somewhere where I had to travel. Right. But it was nice. Yep. And I realized, oh, I'm actually learning when I do that because I'm seeing other places.
Yeah.
So for myself, I mean, I'm a shit photographer, but I do think that taking photos and looking at things is such a big part of that. It's part of the work, but it's not really working. I have to force myself to get out to do that. But it's really important. And now I've gotten so in the process. I mean, I'm still drawing, but I use the iPad so much to draw. And it's so fun because I can take that thing anywhere. And I feel like I'm keeping my reps in and just doing it all the time. And you could take photos with it and draw. So, but yeah, I think that taking breaks away from the work can be, for certain people, can be really important. But it's hard because the longer you stay away from that studio, you get that itch. And I feel like the people who will sustain, even in this high-paced environment, are the ones who have it in them, who just want to be in a studio no matter what. Because if you don't want to be in a studio no matter what, and it's only like this thing that you're doing performatively every once in a while to have a show or to get people to talk about what you're doing or whatever, I feel like over time, it's hard to sustain that. At the end of the day, it's just you telling yourself, I'm going to that box to make pictures or build things or whatever. And if that's not the core drive, it's going to be tricky.
Yeah, you're probably right. I mean, I think I can only imagine that you'd get pretty bored of it. If, I mean, I know some people have a pretty big operation at this point, so it's kind of like a business, and maybe that gives them everything they need. They can both be an artist, be a boss, have a community, have constant like interactions, and you know, that's fine. It's not a model that I'm interested in replicating. But you know, it's not like I don't think it's worse. I don't think it's better. It's like there are some artists who are really good at thinking that way. You know, but at the same time, like it doesn't interest me. And there's certainly a lot of art out there that I see that's pretty high visibility that has that feel and doesn't seem like to take a hot personal take, I don't think it's going to like have longevity.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, it's very much its moment and great. And then someday it'll be one of those things that you're like, oh yeah, remember that?
Yeah.
Remember that work?
Totally.
Which is, again, fine. You know, that's kind of how popular culture works.
Well, the flip can happen too. There could be the lack of longevity because the artist is such a hermit and an antisocial, you know, person that they're just, you know, in their cave making these pictures and never talk to anyone or get out there. And it is part of it. You do, it is communication. Making art is communicating. It's visually, but, you know, it's sharing these images with people. Otherwise, why? I mean, I guess we're just doing it for ourselves. And then why would you care if anyone cares? You know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But if you don't engage outside of that, it's like the opposite of the businessman artist who's a mover shaker who can do all the schmoozing and like have the studio set up. Like they're just basically a gallery and an artist all in one, and they feed off that process for some reason. And but those who are the hermits, they could stop making too, or it can be problematic if they can't engage the work in the public in any way.
Yeah. I mean, for me, like personally, I just like to keep work kind of moving through the moving through the studio and out and showing them. I mean, of course I want to communicate and all of that. That's true. But it's also, to me, if I think back earlier years where I would have, say, a really small studio set up. I didn't know where anything was going to be showing or anything like that. I would spend too much time on individual pieces that really didn't deserve to keep going, or, you know, had been, you know, you're just fussing.
Yeah.
Or then I would, like, you know, out of necessity of space or, you know, kind of materials, you'd be painting over things. And something like the thing I'm almost most grateful for is just that things kind of like come in, I work on things, they move out, and at some point I stop thinking in terms of like certainly making masterpieces or whatever. But even just like really thinking about making a good painting, I mean, it's like when I work, I tend to work on about, I don't know, 5 paintings at a time. Mm-hmm. And as they start finishing, I'll be starting new ones. And it's just like, on some level, it's just to keep everything going and not be like, it's really not about each individual painting. Now, I have a very usually specific relationship to each finished painting by the time it's done. But I don't set out with that in mind. I kind of just start working, or I keep working. And then, you know, I trust that every show I have is kind of the focus that you gave to these works over a certain, you know, specific period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to hold together because that's, you know, those were the concerns I had while making them. And because I'm working on them at the same time, they tend to speak to each other in certain ways. And then as I'm getting them together, I might think like, oh, they're speaking together in too much of a unified voice. And you start throwing kind of a monkey wrench into it just to kind of see it. And, you know, I mean, I know we're maybe overplaying the musical element, but like, certainly as a kid that grew up only listening to, you know, like LPs or something, I've always felt like when I work on a show, it's more like making an album, which I prefer. I mean, now, of course, there's all these art fairs, and so you always have to do these one-offs. And
the singles.
Yeah, I know. It's like...
it's hard, though, right?
It is hard. I mean, it's just kind of strange because also, like... It's true with that analogy. You do think like, oh, here's a singular work that can stand alone amidst the noise of an art fair. But there's the kind of artist in me feels like, yeah, I'd rather have like that in a show with everything else. Yeah. So you get the full mix where, you know, understandably, galleries that are showing up these things, or even, you know, I suppose like collectors or just lookers who want to see tons of work at the same time, you know, want to see, I don't know, some prime artwork by each artist.
Right.
But it's definitely a drain to kind of, I mean, for me at least, it's a lot harder to make 1 or 2 paintings just someone being like, hey, can you make one by so-and-so, than it is to say like, hey, in, you know, 4 months, let's have a show, like, let's make a full body of work.
Yeah.
That part I really understand, and it's much more kind of organic to my way of thinking.
I wonder if it dated, because I'm right there with you. I mean, I mm-hmm. think it, I basically come up with concept records. They're not just LPs.
Yeah.
<They're> like, it's hard. Like, I don't know when it happened, but over the years, I just started locking into having a generative idea. I mean, the work can be pretty loosely related, but in my head, there is a concept. And
Right.
It's really hard to do those one-offs. And I think maybe that's part of, I mean, creatively, we kind of came up that way. I wonder if young people who listen to singles and Spotify and they're not so much in the LP world, if they're that concerned about it, or if it's maybe a little easier to think of like, oh, here's an idea. Oh, there's a new idea. Builds off that one a little bit, but it's not a theme. And I totally, I love the space between those works and how they inform the other ones, like in a show. So that's the thing that I really love, is the space between, let's like, you know, the difference between the second and the third track. Like, why this one's slower, quieter. And if it were by itself, it wouldn't do the same thing. And I've seen your shows with, you know, all the work together, and there's definitely, you can feel this unifying exploration within a given, I don't know, amount of constraints or a vibe to all these figures. And I've seen your stuff at art fairs where it works on its own, and but part of me is almost a little bit like, oh, there's Brian's painting, it got separated from the family. Like, where's the rest of and it holds the wall. Orphan. But it holds the wall, but it looks so much different in next to like an Ugo Rondinone or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's, I guess, for the viewer, that's compelling. You know, I think that's why people are seeing things more often these days.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean,
Instagram, and, you know, look, they're just scrolling and you see different, it's like a big ass group show that you spend half a second on each piece.
Yep.
It's just, you know, it's a different speed.
Yeah.
But I think there's something to be said for the shows where we can have a moment to hang multiple things and people can walk in and look at it and think about it collectively.
Yeah. I mean, I love a show, and it's more the way I think of how, you know, how I interface with the world visually is generally through shows. But then, like you're saying, I'm sure way more people see my work on their phone than see it in person at a gallery. But, you know, I don't know what to do with that. Like, I can't change that, even if, you know, even if I were a Luddite, like, it's, things get photographed now and seen. But it's funny because people, then you get this kind of like, oh yeah, well, your work photographs really well or something. And it's like, kind of, not really. Like, it reads on a screen, and I appreciate some of that, I guess. Like, it is one of those things, like, you can see what it is, and
it pops.
But then inevitably, you know, people are, once they see them in person, they tend to tell me about how different it was than they thought. You know,
scale,
of course,
scale alone, right? Just like seeing scale something alone, your size, not whole, 2 inches by 2 inches.
Right. And the whole notion of like, people are seeing, you know, if something's like, I don't know, 20 by 16 versus 80 by 50 on the screen, they think it's the same size. And so, yeah, exactly, scale the difference between whether it's like larger than your body or, you know, smaller than your head, you know, all these things that are really huge. But again, like, it's also funny, like, I love like anything I can scramble, whether it's scale, whether it's material, things like that really help me, like, that keeps it fresh for me.
Yeah.
And when I was just out in New York, and well, I saw one show in particular that I won't name because it's a, like, it was a perfectly fine show, but it's funny because almost every canvas was like exactly the same size, and the artist had, you know, it was like their signature thing, and it was very, you know, professional. To me, it's like professional art at, you know, one of the blue chip galleries, and it just kind of like, it's interesting because when you're younger, when you're really young, you go to a gallery like that and you think like, oh, you know, this is important or something. Right. And the older you get, and it's people of your own generation, it's the funny thing of like, I'm not trying to talk shit on anyone. It's just, you see it and you realize like, oh yeah, like, this makes sense that this is here because it's being presented in a really digestible manner. And this is work that if you're a collector and you want one, you know, you've got one. It's totally legible to anyone who comes to your whatever house or warehouse, whatever, and looks at it. They're like, oh yeah, you got one. And that makes sense. And, but again, like, I, like, what a weird, I guess it also goes back to, I mean, now it seems like visual arts are pretty vibrant, painting's pretty vibrant in mm-hmm. a way that, like, when I started painting in, like, 89, 90, I mean, and especially in the early 90s, starting in Berkeley and then even being in Chicago, but this whole notion of obviously the kind of, like, painting was not the medium anyone who was trying to do anything right. cool or hip was yeah. doing, and, like, I always loved that. I mean, if it's like, oh, thank God. Yes, I'd love to work in a medium that's dead. And now it's so insane, the amount of painting and the, like, how exploded kind of the dialogue about it is, or the expectations of what a good painting could be, you know. And for the most part, I'm like, more power to it being exploded, but it doesn't mean I want to look at it.
Right.
I mean, you know.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, it's funny, like the I can't help it. I always make the parallel to music references. And like thinking about the show, like we were talking about before, it's like the single versus the record versus the live experience. And the live experience is so much different. And there's a charge there that you can't get. And now I think like to your comment about things looking professional and things like that, or it feels like very poppy, and it feels like when I was young, pop was not cool. Like it was something you pushed back against as an artist or something. It was like, you know, there was the punk ethos versus like the digestible pop culture ethos. Now I think the pop is there's less of an issue with it. It just seems like everyone's like, yeah, this is really good, and but then maybe pop music has gotten a little better. And maybe
I think it's some strange, you know, I feel like this is either the curse or the blessing or whatever of Gen X, is like we had such a specific idea about some of these things and it shifted. And, you know, certainly now, I mean, even if just the kind of like collaborating with, you know, whether it's luxury brands or all this stuff, you know, it's kind of like, it's just strange, you know, for anyone, for people who, it's not like you even had to be too ideological. It just is the way everything seemed. And now that feels really different. And also the people kind of running a lot of, whether it's pop culture, fashion, or something, they're also people who grew up with some of those ideas sometimes. Yeah. So it can be really confusing, actually. And, you know, I've like collaborated here and there with certain things, and it's very strange because it never ends up as interesting as some of it's been to me. It still doesn't feel very natural or comfortable to me. But that's, again, like, because I'm wanting more to be in here, like slowly evolving paintings. That suits me, like temperamentally. And most of these other things work at a breakneck pace. And it, like, once you have the idea, the whole thing needs to kind of happen within a few weeks, and then it's over and it's on to the next thing. And like, part of me finds that really fascinating. But it's not a world that I really want to like lock into.
Yeah. I mean, some people could describe that as like living in the moment. And then some people think it's just like a flash in the pan or something. It's not really digested or considered. But the fortunate thing about, I think, the gift of being an artist is we can set it. We can kind of set our pace to what we want it to be in a way. And, you know, for good or for bad in some circumstances. But, you know, we're in that driver's seat. When you're in the studio, is it quiet? Do you listen to music, podcasts, baseball games? What do you do?
Kind of a mix of all of those, actually.
Depending on the day?
Yeah, depending on the day, depending on the time of day, for sure, depending on the noise that's going on around.
Oh, yeah. Isn't it quiet where you are? I always had this...
It's really
quiet. It's a quiet place.
It's really quiet in this area. I mean, it's, you know, it's only like, I can't remember. Oh, it's like 8,000 people, yeah. A little bigger if you consider the surrounding stuff. But where my studio is like, there's a really tiny industrial zone. And I mean, it literally is like, you know, a little loop.
Yeah.
And so like all the, anyone doing like fabrication or auto work or all these things tend to happen more in this zone.
Yeah.
So it's always kind of depends on like who's your neighbor at that point. And there've been times where there would be years here where I had like no sound for any days really. And then all of a sudden, you know,
noise,
someone comes in and there's, you know, it's noisy, but everyone, you know, it's good neighbors. And so at those points, like whatever, sometimes you need to listen to something just to cover something else.
I was going to say, if there's one, like if you're going to put on a track, cause there's a loud noise outside the studio and you don't want to drown it out and you want to either rock out or whatever you're going to turn up to 11, what is it?
I mean, I think that it always changes, so it kind of depends.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Thin Lizzy.
I do like Thin Lizzy.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
It is good stuff. But yeah, you know.
Depends on the day.
I don't know. Yeah, it depends on the day. It's like sometimes you literally want some minimalist drone just to kind of like put you in your head.
Sure.
Or something, yeah. And then yeah, sometimes Thin Lizzy. I always am returning to, like, you know, for me, years like Neil Young, Bob Dylan, mm-hmm. Alex Chilton. You know, there's certain people that just are kind of never far away. Gene Clark, but then there's a lot of other stuff that kind of gets in the mix more on a month by month basis. So
do you ever dust off like the Four Carnation records or the, you know, the any of those old, you know, Chicago albums?
Yeah, you know, I don't listen to a lot of, I mean, I definitely will every now and then have that kind of curiosity.
Yeah.
And it's funny that you mentioned Four Carnation because I love that record so much. And I was just having a conversation in New York with a friend because we were, you know, like, I'm all for everyone's obsession with Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, Slant. It's a
great,
yeah, yeah.
It's a great record. But and it's funny to see, this was someone talking about like their kid who's in high school and how they're obsessed with that record. And then we were both saying like, but how is it that people aren't more obsessed with the Four Carnation, you know?
I know, it was good. Ariel M, we played with him in Louisville, I think, and he was such a nice guy. That music is really amazing too, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. But I don't, you know, I don't know.
Yeah,
I will go back and listen to stuff sometimes. But the older I get too, you know, I mean, there's a reason why people are kind of like, why marketers are fixated on the 18 to 35 demographic,
yeah.
Because like the passion with which I listen to things has certainly shifted over time. Mm-hmm. And like my desire to like own anything has shifted over time. You know,
that's
I don't
natural.
Know what it, yeah. And I don't really know what it is, but like, of course you can say it's life or it's kids or all these things, but it's also just kind of like, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I know. Getting into a groove of something and just settling into it, you know?
Yeah.
You don't always have to be scrambling, you know, when you spend decades doing that, you kind of want to, you know, just hit a groove.
Yeah, for sure.
What do you have? Do you have anything coming up? Anything that you want to share with people listening of where they can check out your work?
Coming up, I don't have anything immediately. I mean, I don't know when this is coming out. If the show is still up in New York, is like what I feel really connected to that show. To me, like, you know, I always feel like good about the work I send out.
Right.
And, but every now and then a show that you do just kind of feels special. And this show to me feels really connected. And I've got a whole floor of pencil drawings that it's the first time we've shown. I think there's like 50 in there.
Nice.
And if someone can make it over there and just kind of walk through, I think they'll like it. And
when's it come down? What date?
That's a good question. I don't know. I'd have to look. Let me look it up.
This is also important information. We need to share it.
It's true. I know. I should have this already. But also, I have a book. I'm trying to figure out this date right now. That came out from Flood Editions. That's also of these drawings, mm-hmm. pencil drawings. So
nice.
All right. The show is up through March 29th.
I think we'll get this out before that time. So people, all
right.
You got to scramble though, everyone.
Yeah,
gotta,
totally.
Get out like, there. You're going to miss it. And then the book.
Listen to the podcast while on the way.
Yeah, listen to it at the show. What do you, where can the book be purchased?
I imagine it's available at your, you know, typical online booksellers.
Yeah.
But otherwise, Flood Editions is out of Chicago. And you could go to their website, and if they don't send you towards something. I also know the gallery at Anton Kern Gallery mm-hmm. has some on the premises.
Nice.
But I imagine just, you know, searching for it, it should come up. It's called Days, Brian Calvin Days. And I did a pencil drawing starting January 1st, 22. I just happened to have a sketchbook mm-hmm. that I hadn't started. And I decided, as opposed to doing my normal drawing practice, that I would just make one pencil drawing every night before, you know, kind of a nightcap.
Nice.
And it was interesting because it really shifted. It took drawing away from like trying to figure out anything I was like normally doing and more just to kind of let it open up and be nothing or be something really specific.
Yeah.
And then at, you know, by the end, all of a sudden, when you have like 365 drawings accumulated, we thought like, oh, this seemed like it'd make a good book. So it's, the book itself is the exact same size as one of my sketchbooks, but we just trimmed it down to 100 drawings.
Nice.
And I'm really proud of it. It feels, I've been lucky enough to have a lot of publications, you know, over the years, but this one feels really personal and feels more like an artist's book.
Well, everyone should check it out and go check out the show. And it was great to meet and to talk. Thanks so much for doing this.
Yeah, pleasure. All right, take care.